This is Mae Brussel. The name of the program is World Watchers. This is Side 2 of broadcast number 702, May the 20th, 1985. And I'm quoting from a Newsweek article postdated May the 20th, 1985. This article puts down at the bottom of the corner that the Reverend Moon newspaper, the Washington Times, is also offering a $1 million reward for Joseph Mengele, and I briefly mentioned this to you before, Reverend Sun Ming Moon's Unification Church. I saw a one-hour program on the Aryan Nations and Richard Butler on television this past week, and they take up a pledge of allegiance, one nation, one race, and one God. And the explanation of the unification, the use of unification as a word for the Aryan nations that they believe that this country should be only one race, only one God, and that they should all be combined in this one nation. Now, Richard Butler, who believes all this, trained at Lockheed Aircraft with the United States Defense Department. He learned this identity religion from Colonel William Gale, who was in the Pacific in guerrilla activities in the Philippines with Charles Willoughby and General Wiedemeyer. And also over there in the Philippines was Dr. Loyal Davis before his adopted daughter, Nancy, came into the scene as a political wife. Dr. Davis came back from the Philippines to Chicago. Then Nancy went to Hollywood and MGM for the Ronald Reagan connections. This is important because the unification name of the church is identical to the unification group. And out of the Philippines and out of Taiwan and South Korea, the Korean CIA and the United States CIA and Mr. Ryosha Sasakawa, Japanese war criminal during World War II, came the Unification Church and their membership and helping to form the World Anti-Communist League with members of the Waffen-SS. So I don't think it's a coincidence that both of them use the name unification to bring together these factors of only one race and one God and one nation. The far right wing always complains that the Rockefellers and Chase Manhattan and the Council of Foreign Relations want one country, but they discount the far right naturally. They want to break down one which isn't perfect and which also works along with them, but don't call attention to the goal of one unification under these very, very extreme right-wing groups which they work with. And, of course, that's why they don't call attention to them. One item in the Newsweek about the administration of Mr. Stroessner. He is from Germany. He is from Bavaria. He went down to Paraguay and became head of the military dictatorship. That country is similar to Germany as Puerto Rico is to us, and it's an extension of Nazi Germany. And this article says the Israelis developed a strange bedfellows relationship with Stroessner's right-wing German-flavored dictatorship. Paraguay supported Israel in the United Nations. They hired Israel to train its armed forces and maintain their airlines, and the Mossad works with General Stroessner. Now, Israel knew where Mengele was in Paraguay. Simon Wiesenthal knew where he was in Paraguay. Israel trains the armed forces down there that are sterilizing the Indian population in Paraguay. Joseph Mengele is over in Uruguay teaching torture and even killing Jews and experimenting on them, and they knew that in Israel. I mentioned last week, and Simon Wiesenthal knew it. Israel arms and trains, helps the broader band in South Africa. The military Nazi dictatorship that was in power in Argentina, now being tried for murder and other crimes of former presidents. Israel arming and training with General Somoza and Mr. Pinochet, the Nazi in Chile. You have to keep repeating and evaluating, what is the country of Israel? Who are those people in Israel? Who is Simon Wiesenthal? And this is just one example of Newsweek showing you the role of working with Mr. Stroessner and why people weren't interested in Joseph Mengele all along. Now, I did mention since 1983 about the relationship of Fritz Steinacker, the attorney for Mengele, depositing narcotic money from Barbie to Mengele's bank account in Switzerland. I'm going to give you a new name that I've had for 2 years. I sent it in a letter to Mr. Murray Sams, who had a multi-million dollar suit against John DeLorean, the investments. I don't know what he ever did with the information. But this is new for you listeners because I was protecting the name, but being as it took 2.5 years to get Fritz Steinacker's name into Newsweek, I'm going to give you another name. The courier for the money is a man named Harold Buell. He grew up in Chicago, went to Catholic schools there, H-A-L-B-U-E-L-L. He's the bureau chief of the Associated Press. He's the courier of narcotics money from South America or Central America into the accounts of the Nazis in the Swiss bank accounts. And I'm giving you that name as I was protesting it until more of this came out. But because Newsweek and the New York Times and the various writers have all this information and prefer to protect these people, knowing that this information can be investigated and what I'm telling them is turning out to be exactly true, then I have to continue the policy that I do on Kazoo and give you that information first before you ever hear it or see it anywhere else. I've been working with that since 1983, and I've been discussing this on the air since August the 1st, 1983. Now, Ralph Blumenthal of the New York Times has a story on Joseph Mengele, and it's dated May the 11th, 1985, if you want to copy it from your library. It's about the various law officials meeting with Joseph Mengele, and I just want to cite certain things in there that I think are important, not his general chronology of life, but he gives his birth date, March 16th, 1911, and then jumps to 1933, at the time of the rise of Hitler, that Mengele joined the SA. The SA were the assault sections. This is 1933, the assault sections. The brown shirts, the stormtroopers, defined as the original elite strong arm force of Hitler's National Security Party. He doesn't say that. I'm giving you a definition of the SA. They were purged and broken up in 1934 when Ernest Röhm, R-O-H-M, was killed. That was the thing that triggered off the Night of the Long Knives and the murders that took place. And then it goes on in 1937, it jumps from 33 to 37, Mengele joined the Nazi Party, and in 1939 he was married, and then went to a research institute for racial purity in Frankfurt, Germany. Now, I don't know how many years he was at Frankfurt studying racial purity, but from Frankfurt, Germany, Mr. Fritz Kramer, he was there and then went to Rome and then came to the United States, where he got settled until he was in Army intelligence and brought German-born Henry Kissinger under his arm to go back to Europe to mingle with the Nazis when the war was over. Now, I gave Ralph Blumenthal and all the others the FBI reports about the naturalization of Joseph Mengele and how the FBI said that he would have been naturalized in the United States, according to their documents, December the 5th, 1932. And that's identical to Dr. Hermann Urban, the fellow that was naturalized in the United States, and then went to Germany, Austria, and became a member of the Gestapo, the SS, the stormtroopers, and then eventually rounded up and met people such as Errol Flynn and World Nazi Organizations, tied directly to Martin Bormann, Adolf Hitler, Rudolf Hess, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, the Hollywood crowd, the Mexico crowd, the Nazis in the Bahamas. Now, this chronology just mentions 1933, he joined the SA, the stormtroopers, but a year before, according to the FBI reports, Joseph Mengele, similar to Dr. Urban, was naturalized. The same FBI report that was dated 1966 said that February the 9th, 1944, there was a question of denaturalization proceedings against Joseph Mengele because his name was on a Nazi party list. And according to the New York Times and Ralph Blumenthal's report, in 1937, he joined the Nazi party. So the FBI had a record that he was naturalized in 1932, and that by 1944 they were going to denaturalize him because of the war going on in the midst of the war, and they were going to take away his papers. At that time, he was working at Auschwitz. This FBI report has been ignored by Simon Wiesenthal, by the New York Times, by the lawyers on this case, by the FBI, but it's an FBI document, and it can't go away because the person who sent for it originally, and I was the first one in the United States that I know of to have it, got it because he was in Honduras with his uncle, who was sitting with Joseph Mengele, and that's how he happened to send for this, because he was right down there with him. So I bring this up again because the chronology in the New York Times, it's printed May 11th, 1985, isn't much different than what I'm telling you could fit directly into the time slot. That doesn't prove or disprove, but it makes it more possible because there's a space in those years that is not accounted for. Now, this article also says that in 1965, Joseph Mengele went to meet Otto Skorzeny in Spain, and they thought he was there again in 1970. Now, remember, Otto Skorzeny, or maybe you don't remember, was the gentleman, according to the latest reports, who helped Joseph Mengele escape from Europe down to South America, to Buenos Aires, and then he went from there to Paraguay. Henry Kissinger was in charge of Otto Skorzeny, according to Charles Higham's new book, American Swastika, and John Loftus's reports. Henry Kissinger, these are all the protege of that great Fritz Kramer I'm trying to smoke out, was in charge of Klaus Barbie in South America. Barbie, Skorzeny, and Mengele all worked together, all were a team. Skorzeny came out of the Battle of the Bulge, Mengele from Auschwitz, and Klaus Barbie from France. And the three of them, one from killing the French resistance from that area, the other doing the experiments in Poland at Auschwitz, and the other involved with the Battle of the Bulge and with Martin Bormann and the funding for the resurgence of the Nazis later, were all directly linked to Henry Kissinger, and his mentor, of course, was Fritz Kramer. So that Ralph Blumenthal has Mengele identified in Spain in 1965 and in 1970. 65 was 3 years after the assassination of John Kennedy, and 1970 was Richard Nixon was in power, and Klaus Barbie could openly begin as the cocaine king, and the Nazis could resurge. Nixon had a long history of sympathy with the Nazis and bringing Nikolai Maloxa to his office in Whittier, the head of the Iron Guard, and working with Otto von Bolschwing, and that was the Gala Network. So they were home free and could travel and do more. As soon as the two Kennedys were out of the way, in 1965, Robert Kennedy was still alive, but pretty soon, by the 70s, the Kennedys were dead, and there would be no more Democratic candidates that would oppose what could be the future Nazification of this country. The New York Times has a story May the 15th, 1985, on General Strassner, and it tells he was born in Bavaria, and this report says that he's going now to back to Germany with all of this activity going on, and with the President of the United States honoring the Waffen-SS, that he's been invited by an organization called the Institute for the Development of German-Paraguayan Relationships. Well, that'd be like the governor of Puerto Rico coming to the United States for an Institute for the Friendship of Puerto Rico with the United States. This is simply a means of his appearing here and trying to explain some of the things that are going on. Now, he's going to be entertained by Franz Josef Strauss, the Bavarian Prime Minister. I mentioned Franz Josef Strauss several weeks ago, April 29th, almost a month ago. The Bavarian minister, the president of Bavaria, a staunch Nazi who said to Ronald Reagan, don't go to Bitburg, and I said the reason he didn't want him to go, and the reason Manfred Rommel, the mayor of Stuttgart, the son of the Desert Fox, the field marshal Rommel, didn't want this opening up these wounds, is that they were now making these new contacts. Strassner would be coming, and this was calling attention to all the activity that they didn't want, began to bring out more articles on Nazism than had been out in the last 10 years. Maybe I should say in the last 40 years, more has come out in the last few weeks, besides an occasional book review or so. But Mr. Strauss is now on his way in July to Bavaria, and I'm sure he's going to talk about Simon Wiesenthal. And one of the people who doesn't want to be seen with him is Richard von Weizsäcker, that very controversial person. He was in Hitler's army. He was an attorney in Hitler's Germany. He represented his father, the Nazi war criminal. He said he's going to spend an extended summer vacation abroad. He doesn't want to be seen visibly with Mr. Strassner at the time of this great reunion. After the Bitburg incident, he's bowing out, although Helmut Kohl is anticipating this visit. And I'll do more on Kohl's relationship to Strassner in a few moments. But I do want to, before time runs out, just go into Reverend Moon and Gulf Oil and their money into Korea and into Bolivia, and the tangled web of the Mellon family with particularly these two countries, Bolivia when Klaus Barbie was in the height of working for the government with the death squads and also with drug dealing and with Mengele, and with the takeover of the Washington Star by the Reverend Moon paper. Why would Reverend Moon, under Mr. Ahmad, A-M-A-U-D, it's Ahmad, I call it, there's no R in there, A-M-A-U-D, small d-e, Borch Grave, B-O-R-C-H, G-R-A-V-E, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Times, putting an ad wanting Joseph Mengele when the World Anti-Communist League, when Reverend Moon and Ryosha Sasakawa and this whole organization of Southeast Asia and the Waffen SS combined have worked with Moon and Barbie and the death squads and Mengele and Skorzeny ever since World War II. This team have been instrumental in stirring up these troubled areas and putting in fascism if they could and terrorism. Why would Reverend Moon be running a $1 million reward? Now, in the American Swastika, Charles Higham talks about John J. McCloy, the High Commissioner of Germany, who we've mentioned before, who was in charge of Klaus Barbie and kept the relationship and had, in quotes, a special relationship with Klaus Barbie in the CIC, the intelligence system, and it was John J. McCloy that released all the top Nazis and also Mr. von Weizsäcker, Richard von Weizsäcker's father, the A to Z of Nazis. This American swastika refers to John J. McCloy and his particular caring for and protecting Klaus Barbie. And getting to the role of John J. McCloy, I got out my hearings. I have 5 or 6 volumes on the Korea Gate hearings and their influence peddling in various countries that were being examined in 1978. Now, before I get to the hearings, the Washington Times, in addition to that big ad they run, a quarter of a page almost every week, the Washington Times, Tuesday, May 7th, has a full page on Michael Ledeen. Ledeen is a great counterintelligence with Mr. de Borchgrave. He works with John Singlaub. He's a protege of Alexander Haig. Again, Haig's mentor is Fritz Kramer. So it goes from Kramer to Haig to Ledeen, and he works with Claire Sterling, and they make up the lies about the KGB trying to shoot the Pope. And there's a full-page picture, a quarter of a page of Ledeen, and a new article, Michael Ledeen's Grave New World. It's in the same issue, again, that they're advertising this reward for Mengele. And I question the paper. They have full-page pictures of Daniel Graham of the Star Wars and the co-partner with Fritz Kramer, and they'll have a full page of John Singlaub. And this week it's Michael Ledeen of Disinformation, Counterintelligence, and General Mischief. So I got out, as I say, the hearings on the Korea Gate influence peddling. Incidentally, the subcommittee staff director was Robert Boettcher, B-O-E-T-T-C-H-E-R. We've mentioned him before. He went flying out a window and was murdered in New York this year. Another member of the committee is Leo Ryan, who was murdered down in Guyana. And the gist of the part that I want to share with you from the investigation of Korean-American relations has to do with John McCloy, who so carefully protected Klaus Barbie along with Henry Kissinger. And when the question of Gulf Oil came up, which is the Mellon family, Richard Mellon Scaife and all the Mellons, at the time of the paying of Korea, South Korea, the man in charge of the investigations was John J. McCloy. Judge John Sirica in the district court in Washington decided that because the Security and Exchange Commission wanted an investigation, that the chairman would be John McCloy, who covered up not only the killing and murder of John Kennedy, but protected Klaus Barbie, and now he's to help them look into the money of the Mellon family. And this document, or a series of documents on the Korean-American relations, goes into the Mellons giving money to South Korea. Specifically, on page 883, they put $300 million into South Korea. This was in 1978 of the hearings. And they got $150 million back, and they can't account for the other $150 million. And I'm wondering if the Mellons bought the Washington Star as their voice because of their unlimited millions and millions of dollars. I did one broadcast on just a little bit of where some of their money goes. And so they call it a loss to South Korea, and at the same time they're giving money to South Korea, they're giving it to the Bolivian government. Page 883, Gulf's earnings from Korea. Senator Percy, you indicate your investment totaled $300 million. What are your recent earnings from Korea on that investment? Have you broken that up? This is from Gulf Oil. No, not precisely. At one time, I can probably give you a measure. Our total exposure at one time was $300 million. We've been there 12 years, but we haven't recovered the other $150 million. That's unaccountable for $150 million out of South Korea. Then they said, is Bolivia's case the same? Was it an illegal contribution by Bolivian law? And Senator Percy asked, and it seems that they were heavily funding the Bolivian government when investigated in 1978. And as I say, Klaus Barbie was instrumental in part of the Bolivian government. John J. McCloy is supposed to be questioning Gulf Oil and their distributions of money, and it's John McCloy who had worked with Klaus Barbie down there, and Henry Kissinger was working with Klaus Barbie and Otto Skorzeny, and Skorzeny arranged the trip down to South America for Joseph Mengele. Now, this investigation, page 836, goes into the money in Bolivia, and Senator Percy said on behalf of Senator Case, how many people and individuals in Bolivia knew of your political contributions there? He says, I really don't know. And it talks about Gulf Oil's money in Italy and in South Korea and their Bahamas fund. We're talking about $300 million. Now, the Washington Post had a story February 28, 1985, to show you a little bit about the Mellon money. Pittsburgh billionaire financed Westmoreland suit against CBS. And there's a picture of Richard Mellon Scaife, the man behind the Heritage Foundation, behind Edwin Meese, who makes the foreign and domestic policies for Ronald Reagan. Scaife put up $3 million tab for Westmoreland's suit against CBS, Richard Mellon Scaife. And he said, furthermore, the $3 million went to Capital Legal Foundation, and Dan M. Burt would get more money. Scaife, a great-grandson of the founder of the Mellon Oil and Banking Empire, was the real funder for the Westmoreland case that tried to break the back of CBS. Now, it was pennies for them, and he said he would do more, and with that kind of money, and they worked with Mr. Daubuisson and Mr. Jesse Helms and the far right wing, they can continue to finance and eventually take over CBS. And, of course, Dan Rather, because it cost poor Richard Mellon Scaife $3 million to try to break the back of Dan Rather with his story about Westmoreland. The point is that the Mellons have this unlimited hundreds of millions of dollars. They could put $300 million into countries like South Korea or Bolivia. The person guarding the house, the investigator, is the same John McCloy, just like the late Leon Jaworski, who's always called in to protect companies such as the Gulf Oil. And these companies fund these death squads and combine newspapers and conceal the network of that Odessa that they wholeheartedly support. So the importance of Reverend Moon's paper is the people that he has photographed every week. As I say, it's a rogues gallery of counterintelligence, of far right-wing material. It's really a paper that Richard Mellon Scaife would love to own, and I wouldn't doubt that he does own it. And the purpose of getting the paper to oppose the Washington Post and Katherine Graham and all the articles that I cite that are factual, that try to reveal what's going on at congressional hearings, and you'll hear me say over and over again, Washington Post and New York Times. Well, the Reverend Moon paper has these wonderful, huge photographs of Jean Kirkpatrick and J. Peter Grace, and it's one page after the other of the real right-wing group that want to control and strangle this country. And again, interestingly enough, they keep running this ad that they want information on Joseph Mengele when they are the last people in the world who would care about one experiment at Dachau or Auschwitz, who would care about one victim of Nazism, who would care about one drop of the drug running they did. They want to get the names of the people that know about Joseph Mengele so they can turn it over to people like John Singlaub or from these mercenaries, and I'm sure have a huge attack on knowledgeable people such as Mr. Boettcher, the one who was the investigator for this committee, who a few years later goes flying off a building from New York City and just splashes the bottom, and that's the end of him. They want information so that they can get rid of the witnesses, and they don't give a darn or a damn about Nazis or Joseph Mengele for his crimes. They want to know who knows where he is so they can take care of that person. I mentioned before, the ad is like a vacuum, but when you read the Korea Gate hearings and you realize how much the Mellons are involved in these various countries where these activities are taking place and running ads at the same time, you have to question, of course, what the purpose is of those ads. Now, many of you read this last week that Mr. Kohl's party suffered a stinging defeat in Germany. He felt that having Ronald Reagan come to the summit meeting before the elections would do him good. He underestimated the people, as I stated before. And the summit meeting was to be in June, and he pushed it up to May so that he would get a strong re-election vote. It didn't work. New York Times, May 13th, Kohl's party suffers a stinging defeat. Los Angeles Times, May the 13th, Kohl's party loses the state vote. Another one, LA Times, Social Democrats assail Kohl over Reagan, the idea that he defended Bitburg, and they blame him for pushing the visits to Bergen-Belsen, for resurrecting all these bones and the facts, and that he shouldn't have brought all this out, and that he was stubborn, and it ruined the party. But he's not afraid of ruining the party. Helmut Kohl has set up two more parties. The New York Times has described May the 16th, 1985. New risk for Helmut Kohl. This is one to entertain the Silesians. Those are the group from Poland that have been taken over. They are refugees from the Silesia area who are responsible for some of the terrible war crimes that I described and want to get back to later on future broadcasts. And he also is ready to entertain Mr. Stroessner from Paraguay. The government, according to the New York Times, said that Chancellor Kohl will hold two political, risky encounters and address. He's going to address a gathering of the Silesian Germans in June, and then he's going to, in Bonn in July, entertain General Alfredo Stroessner from Paraguay. The latest issue of having the Silesians be entertained by Helmut Kohl was brought up in a newspaper. They questioned whether he should do this at this time. There was an uproar over Reagan's visit to Bitburg Military Cemetery, where soldiers of the Waffen-SS are. And the two events on the chancellor's calendar have developed the potential for further embarrassment for him. Now, is this embarrassment that he has to take because these people now control him and are giving orders? Of course it is. The same article goes on to say that also under fire was a speech published by Richard von Weizsäcker with language that had anti-Semitic innuendos and also accusations about Hitler being the only one responsible, the lone planner for World War II. So the people in West Germany began to be more conscious of Richard von Weizsäcker and what he is saying. He had his speech published the 40th anniversary of the end of the war. He had 250,000 copies sent to be distributed in every school. And the papers there are outraged, and they accuse him of assertions that he shouldn't make, and they had to do with the persecution of Jews. So that Mr. Kohl and Mr. von Weizsäcker, who thought that the 40 years had passed and that all these bones had been put to rest, underestimated their plans and the reaction of the people. So instead of accepting the entertainment of the Silesians and honoring them in June and entertaining Mr. Stroessner in July, he's under pressure. It doesn't mean he won't go through with it. He'll certainly go through with it, but it means that the people there are more aware of it and they're vocalizing it, and they never would have done that if Ronald Reagan hadn't insisted on going to the cemetery of the Waffen-SS. I don't have the address of freedom where you can order these articles on Interpol and Nazi experimentations and our government's role with Interpol, but I'll bring it to you. I'll have it for you next week. In the meantime, I'll wind this hour down. I wanted to include a new story on the Korean jet line, but no use opening it up now. I'll do it next week. Thank you very much for sending me the clippings, and people around the country keep sending me wonderful articles and clippings. I can't write each time. I appreciate them very much, and use them. As you can hear on these broadcasts, you might recognize things that you've sent to me, and so I'll thank all of you right now, and I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel, and you keep reading books and articles and see these interesting developments as they come together. I always forget to add, I close in such a hurry, that you can write to me in care of P.O. Box 22155, Carmel 93922, and have a self-enclosed, put a stamp in an envelope, self-enclosed, and I'll send you sheets of source material that I have for each broadcast. I type them up, and then you can look up those articles at the library and get them yourself, and it'd be easier to understand some of these stories if you read the original sources, and they are available for you. So write to me at that P.O. box, and I'll get these off to you. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel, and I'll say goodbye. And start saving your articles about terrorism in America, about bombings and bombs that were reported that didn't take off, fires that are started, arsons, and watch the escalation of domestic terrorism in California and throughout the country, as it was in California when Reagan and Meese were in charge of things here. Watch how it spreads throughout the nation in the next months to come, in the next year, in fact. Meanwhile, as I say, this is May, and I'll be back with you next week.